This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The death of a justice. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Wednesday, July 17. Glad you could spend some time with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has died from complications after a stroke earlier this week. He was 99.
House Democrats have passed a symbolic resolution condemning President Trump's recent tweets as racist.
Authorities in Southern California have charged 22 members of the MS-13 gang with a killing spree in which they use baseball bats and machetes.
And how the expanding economy has lifted low-skilled workers.
The recession was pretty brutal for everybody. It was especially hard on anybody who, for example, only had a high school diploma or even less than a high school diploma. Those people saw their unemployment rates shoot up much more and their wages take much more of a hit than anybody with a college degree. But maybe what they really just needed was time. They needed the economy to heal to a point where you had an extremely tight labor market.
Wall Street Journal economics writer Greg Ipp on the surprise winners in this economy. He's here in about 25 minutes. Retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has died at the age of 99. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Appointed by President Ford, Justice Stevens served 34 years on the High Court before retiring in 2010. Chief Justice John Roberts said in a statement that Mr. Stevens brought an inimitable blend of kindness, humility, wisdom, and independence. His work included writing the decision that established a consumer's right to record TV programs and two opinions restricting claims by the administration of President George W. Bush that it could imprison and punish detainees at Guantanamo Bay without congressional authorization or judicial oversight. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Justice Stevens, known for his trademark bow tie, died yesterday in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, after complications from a stroke he suffered Monday. 2 months ago, he published his third book, titled The Making of a Justice, Reflections on My First 94 Years. House Democrats have passed a resolution condemning recent tweets by President Trump as racist. These were the social media posts from Sunday, in which he called for four U.S. congresswomen to go back to their countries if they're so unhappy with the United States. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets.
Mrs. Pelosi's characterization of the tweets as racist was ruled out of order by the chair, but were then kept on the record in a separate vote. House rules say members may not call a president racist. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise.
Rather than engaging in this constant barrage of personality attack that we've seen week after week after week, the American people expect us to be spending our time up here fighting for the issues they care about.
The largely symbolic resolution now moves to the Republican-controlled Senate, which is not expected to take up the measure. The U.S. right now, as you know, is being split apart by a seething immigration debate left unresolved by successive administrations and Congresses. Put bluntly, the immigration system is broken and needs fixing, yet the emotions now being stirred probably are making it less likely, not more likely, that it will be fixed anytime soon. So says Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jerry, explain.
You know, I think the underlying issue really is immigration. And a lot of this has been about race, racial tensions, charges that President Trump was racist by tweeting that four women of color who are congresswomen, fresh, young Democratic congresswomen, should go back to where they came from, even though three of the four of them were born in the U.S. And I think a lot of the conversation about that has been about race. But I think the underlying issue there and in the question of whether there are going to be mass deportation raids, the administration is threatened, and the kind of overall concern about conditions at the U.S.-Mexican border and people being penned up, they all have a common root, which is a debate about what is the role of immigration and what is the role of immigrants in this country. And I think one of the sad parts about this whole state of affairs is that the kind of heated rhetoric we're now seeing makes it less likely rather than more likely that we'll get to a solution to what is really, everybody agrees, a broken immigration system.
Yeah. Why do you say it that way? Why are we less likely because of this emotional rhetoric?
Well, you know, we're now at a point in which the conversation about immigration reform has been overlaid with charges of, you know, racism and immoral behavior and bad faith on all sides. And I think that Democrats are getting themselves dug in a position in which they might actually decide as a party that they're for decriminalizing illegal immigration at the border, making it a civil offense, not a criminal offense. Meanwhile, Republicans are getting more and more adamant that we should close the door and not allow people to come to the U.S. and seek asylum at all from Central America. And in fact, the Trump administration moved in that direction now. And I think you sort of have a sense of both the rhetoric and emotions getting higher and the common ground getting smaller, and both sides getting dug in on positions that may be more difficult than ever to reconcile.
I'm speaking with Jerry Zibe, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "The Go Back Message Deepens Immigration Debate Wounds." You sort of say that the most of the points are, I don't know, can be common ground type material, right? Folks want to stop illegal immigration, I think, generally speaking. It's just what, how they get there or how to...
Well, look, I mean, there have been two occasions in the last couple of years in which there appeared to be a bipartisan consensus, one that both the White House and Congress could agree on, to make some changes and some fixes in the immigration system, you know, including more border security and including clarifying, you know, the rules for seeking asylum in the U.S. And they fell apart, and largely because the White House backed away under pressure from the right, because one of the elements of that compromise, or both those compromises, was going to be to provide legal status to the Dreamers. These are the young immigrants who came as children, not of their own accord, but with their parents, but who've been here for a long time and have been educated here and are now adults here. And
all right, you point out, too, that the president and his supporters point out that his administration supports legal immigration. Is there problematic messaging there for him?
Well, not really. I mean, there is some debate about what kind of legal immigration, and I think what the administration is trying to do is say we are for keeping the levels of legal immigration steady and stable. Some business people would like the levels of legal immigration to go higher, so there's some tension on that point. The Trump administration wants the legal immigrants who are allowed to be tilted more toward merit-based people with job skills and education and less toward family reunification, and that bothers people on the left. But I think, you know, I think there is an agreement that, you know, legal immigration is good and desirable. There are debates about the details. A lot of this is about the debate over how you handle illegal immigration. But I will say that the Trump administration, while it says it's for basically steady legal immigration, has actually taken some steps to reduce legal immigration. So there isn't quite consensus on even the legal immigration part of this debate yet either.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Zibe, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
This human resources professional is a rock star thanks to Kronos. And this is her hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're engaging all the best people.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Thanks for being with us. A total of 22 suspected members of the MS-13 gang have been charged with federal racketeering, murder, and other charges in connection with a series of brutal killings in Southern California. 19 of those 22 are considered illegal immigrants, with most landing in the U.S. over the past 4 years from Central America. Law enforcement officials say their medieval-style violence involved weapons like baseball bats and machetes. Nick Hanna, U.S. Attorney for Los Angeles, says the defendants mostly preyed upon other recent immigrants who they believed were rivals.
We are unsealing a 12-count federal racketeering indictment that charges 22 members of MS-13, most of whom directly participated in a killing spree over the past 2 years.
Those arrested were all part of the so-called Fulton clique of MS-13, one of the most violent of about 20 factions of MS-13 operating in the Los Angeles area. They operated primarily in the San Fernando Valley. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, in a political repudiation, the Democrat-led House has voted to condemn President Trump's comments against four congresswomen of color as racist, despite protestations by Trump's Republican congressional allies and his own insistence he doesn't have a racist bone in his body. 2 days after Trump tweeted that four Democratic freshmen should go back to their home countries, though all are citizens and three were born in the U.S., Democrats muscled the resolution through the chamber by 240 to 187 over near-solid GOP opposition. Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
The House, hopefully, has come together, standing as one, to denounce the White House's xenophobic attacks on our members.
The review carries no legal repercussions, but could help Trump with his diehard conservative base. John Paul Stevens moved left as the Supreme Court shifted to the right during his nearly 35 years as a justice. That's how the bow-tie-wearing Republican from the Midwest emerged as the leader of the High Court's liberal wing and a strong proponent of abortion rights, consumer protection, and limits on the death penalty. Stevens, who died yesterday at age 99 at Fort Lauderdale, served longer than all but two justices and was the second oldest in the court's nearly 230 years. He stepped down from the bench at age 90. Seeking to become the next U.S. Defense Secretary, Army Secretary Mark Esper promised senators he would invest in military modernization and tackle the threat posed by great power competitors such as Russia and China. He was asked about the latest tensions with Iran.
I agree. We do not want war with Iraq, with Iran. We are not seeking war with Iran. We need to get back on the diplomatic channel.
If approved by the full Senate, Esper would become the first confirmed defense chief in the more than 6 months since Jim Mattis resigned following disagreements with President Trump over Syria, Pentagon personnel picks, and U.S. relationships with its allies. HBO's Game of Thrones picked up a record-setting 32 Emmy nominations, eclipsing the all-time record of 27 set by NYPD Blue in 1994. And if Game of Thrones successfully defends its Best Drama Series Emmy, it will bring its lifetime total to four, tying it with Hill Street Blues, L.A. Law, The West Wing, and Mad Men. For most Emmys by a drama series, winners will be announced September 22nd.
Wow, I had no idea there were even 32 nominations possible.
I couldn't even name them.
And well, surprised that NYPD Blue was the last one to get this many.
Yeah, 1994. It's quite a while ago.
I thought there would have been a more modern show getting that many. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Warning from the financial experts, stop acting like an ATM for your adult children. A new study by Merrill Lynch says parents are putting their financial future in jeopardy to support their adult kids, with nearly 8 in 10 of us giving some financial support to them, and that support is often setting us back financially. Insight from Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Katie, what's up here?
Nearly 3 in 4 of them say they put their children's interests ahead of their own and need to save for retirement. So what they're doing is they're funding their kids for whatever reasons rather than maxing out their retirement accounts. And this is even scarier. 2 in 3 say they've sacrificed their financial security for the sake of their children.
Oh, man.
And I know it's tempting to do, but it's a no-no.
Yeah. Geez, where are we helping them the most?
Well, look, it's a variety of ways. Some parents pay their rent, right? That's not cheap. But, I mean, cell phone bills, you see that all the time, right? Where someone's 28, 29 years old, on their own, has a job, mom, dad's still paying the cell phone bill. There's a variety of ways that they're doing this. But, look, if you're not ready, you know, saving enough for retirement, you're not going to be ready for retirement. You should not do this except for in, you know, extreme cases. You should not be doing this. That's what pretty much every expert you're going to talk to says.
But by all means, have your kid on the family plan so you can save a few bucks, but they ought to be covering the cost.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I mean, not only is this detrimental to your retirement, right? And that, you know, you're going to put your kids in a very precarious spot if you, you know, you're giving them money now when they maybe could afford it on their own, but you're giving them money. Then all of a sudden when you need their help, what are you going to, you're going to move in with them? Like, nobody wants that situation, yeah. Right? So avoid it. But you're also maybe not really teaching them the greatest financial lessons, right? You're handing out money. They need to learn at some point. They're adults. They've, you know, presumably gone to college, graduated high school, whatever. They need to learn these lessons, and you're just handing them money. It maybe doesn't really teach it to them.
Mm. I'm speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, about her piece entitled 3 in 4 Older Parents Make This Financially Disastrous Mistake. And we're talking about helping out too much with the adult kids. All right, so what are some of the workarounds here? Because you mentioned there you can offer some non-financial support.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's plenty of ways to give them non-financial support, right? Like, let's say they are in a really hard spot, but instead of paying their rent, maybe offer them to come live with you until they land a job, right? Instead of, repaying their student loans for them, maybe help them refinance it so they can have more manageable payments. Look, help them make a budget, right? I mean, that's a simple thing. Maybe they actually can't afford these things. It's just they don't really understand where their money's going and they're going out or whatever. Help them make a budget. And then know when you're giving. Like, there are right circumstances, right? If a kid is, like, clearly victimized by circumstances that were beyond their control.
Especially medical-related stuff. Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Underwear, socks, shirts, hoodies, sweatpants. Guys, we all have them, right? Of course we do. They're the staples of our wardrobes. How many times have you been in a department store looking at aisles and aisles of underwear and socks? Well, this is not the most invigorating shopping experience, right? You just want to grab and go, but you can't because you're kind of playing a game of roulette as to which ones are going to fit you. That's why they developed Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is going to give you right now 20% off your first order. Go to MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code Gordon. Welcome to a stress-free, easy shopping experience that will guarantee you the best fit and the most comfortable top drawer apparel you'll ever own. Custom engineered fabric, detailed stitching, even odor eliminating underwear and socks make Mack Weldon the obvious choice. If you don't like your first pair of underwear, keep them. Get a refund. No questions asked. Mack Weldon giving you 20% off right now on your first order. Go to MackWeldon.com right now and enter the promo code Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, July 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has died at age 99. House Democrats pass a resolution condemning President Trump's tweets as racist. 22 gang members, 19 of them illegals, indicted on murder charges in Southern California. Hottest weather of the summer sets into the central and eastern U.S. The Washington Monument turned into a Saturn V rocket in honor of the Apollo 11 moon landing. It's worth your Google search. And firefighter kindness in New Jersey. That story in about 20 minutes. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. For years, falling wages and high unemployment seemed proof that low-wage workers needed an entirely new set of skills to succeed in the American economy, especially as it's shaped more and more by technological change and globalization. It turns out what they needed most was time. Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal, says as the economic expansion reaches a record age and unemployment remains near generation lows, the fortunes of low-skilled workers have turned up markedly. Greg, how so?
What is encouraging here is that a lot of us thought that tide would never come in again. The recession was pretty brutal for everybody. It was especially hard on anybody who, for example, only had a high school diploma or even less than a high school diploma. Those people saw their unemployment rates shoot up much more and their wages take much more of a hit than anybody with a college degree. in the first years of the expansion, you know, up until around 2010 to 2014, there was a lot of discussion of, oh, well, this is like permanent, you know, these people have been permanently like left behind by our globalizing, technologically innovative economy. But maybe what they really just needed was time. They needed the economy to heal to a point where you had an extremely tight labor market. And a lot of employers have decided, hey, we don't need to hold out for the person, the applicant with the bachelor's degree and the 5 years of experience. Let's try some of these people who don't have as many qualifications, and it's working out.
Some of the data was interesting in that folks with a high school diploma or less actually had a stronger bounce back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what we're discovering is that the business cycle itself, you know, booms and busts, are a very powerful influence on how particular people see their fortunes rise and fall. And it may be that folks with college degrees are just less exposed to when times get tough and then get better than these people who have less qualifications. But what this basically means is that if you want to lift all boats, you want to make sure that the benefits of growth, you know, trickle down to the folks who don't have the most experience, the most skills, who might have a blemish on their background, like a drug, like a positive drug test or something on their criminal record, then there's nothing that really beats a healthy economy and a super tight labor market. Because when there's a lot of competition among employers for jobs, employers find that they just can't, you know, layer on as many criteria as they used to. And it turns out that a lot of people who that were not getting picked up for jobs are now actually employable.
We're speaking with Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled "A Record Expansion Surprise Winners, the Low Skilled." What did jump out at me was the 8 years to recover for some of these folks.
Right. So some research by the Federal Reserve has found that when they examine, you know, business cycles at the state level, that there's this very pronounced underperformance by folks with just high school or less. And to get back to the, you know, rates of employment and wages that they had before the economy went down, it takes on average 8 years. Now, obviously, if the next recession comes along before 8 years are up, these folks never get back to their starting point.
Yeah.
And perhaps one of the reasons we've seen this inequality open up, the so-called college premium grow, where folks with more education earn more, is that recessions have come along and prevented people from getting back to their starting point. And what this means is that there's, for all the usual reasons the Federal Reserve wants to keep the economy going, here's another very good reason, which is that the longer they can keep the economy growing without having a recession, the more progress they make in closing that gap between the people at the top and the people at the bottom of the job market ladder.
No, it surprised me, too. There's some analysis which said employers griping about the skills gap and the lack of talented workers at times turned out to be largely just something cyclical that happens here?
Yes. Well, I mean, at all times, all employers will have issues finding precisely the person that they want for a particular job at the salary that they're willing to pay. So we shouldn't be surprised that at any given time we'll hear these sort of complaints or these observations that from employers. I think what we were sort of led to believe was that this so-called mismatch between the jobs that were available and the workers that were out there to do them was a much more macroeconomic phenomenon that explained high levels of unemployment. And that just turns out not to be true. There was research that has shown that job ads that employers put out where they say the criteria they list changes when the state of the economy changes. When unemployment is high, employers are much more likely to say we need a bachelor's degree or we need 5 years of experience. When unemployment is low, that same employer advertising for basically the same job will not ask for those things.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username at Gordon Deal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there are positives and negatives to the boom in restaurant delivery services. While we all enjoy the convenience, It also means that another person is charged with handling your food, and they, too, can get hungry. This is illustrated by a man in Pennsylvania who is accusing his delivery driver of speeding off with a belly full of barbecue. Fox News says Chris Payton of York County claims he ordered 6 ribs from a local barbecue restaurant via DoorDash, only to discover that the driver had helped herself to 2 of the ribs and some of the waffle fries before dropping them off. Payton took photos of his incomplete order, noting that the 2 ribs appeared to be torn off from the rest of the meat and that bite marks appeared to be left behind too. DoorDash says that the offending Dasher is no longer working with the company. This follows a similar complaint lodged against a DoorDash delivery driver earlier this year. In March, a customer in Stockton, California claimed his Dasher took a sip of his milkshake before dropping it off, although he didn't discover the driver's dirty deed until later when he watched his family's front door surveillance footage.
You have to believe that this is been going on since delivery service began,
right?
Decades ago.
I mean, certainly when we've all had pizza delivered, we've suspected that, you know, maybe the driver took a detour or something with our pizzas, that kind of thing.
But now you got the, you know, the front door. Everybody's got front door surveillance, it seems, these days, and you can catch this stuff happening. That's why it makes a lot of news.
Although, you know, we didn't have to really work too hard to catch the woman who left bite marks in in the ribs. That was a little obvious.
Right. Probably some DNA sample left behind, too, with her saliva.
I mean, if she had taken, one rib and a couple of fries, probably wouldn't have noticed it, right?
Yes.
Or wouldn't have made at least such a big deal about it.
Right.
But if you're going to leave, you know, a half-eaten rib with bite marks on it, they're going to complain.
Let's bring a plastic knife and just cut it off so it doesn't look like it's been ripped off.
Yes.
Maybe you could get away with it.
There's got to be a better way to do this. And, you know, Gordon, it's stories like this that keep people playing the lottery. A man from Maine just won a huge scratch-off lottery jackpot for the second time in less than 2 years. State lottery officials say Peter Alley of Bar Harbor, Maine, won a $500,000 prize from a scratch-off ticket he bought for $20 last month. The big ticket was cause enough for celebration for Alley, but it also came about 18 months after he won another $100,000 from a $5 scratch-off ticket he bought in December of 2017. To say the odds of such a thing are steep would be an understatement. According to the Maine State Lottery website, the odds of winning the $500,000 prize are 1 in 137,000, while the odds of winning the $100,000 prize in the game Alley won 2 years ago are 1 in 264.
Holy cow.
Now, you combine those, I'm no mathematician, but the odds of doing both of those within 18 months of each other are even higher than these odds, you know, for sure.
That's remarkable. These are the types of lottery winnings, too, that fly under the radar screen. Now, if he hadn't won the previous $100,000 prize, nobody notices the $500,000,
right,
which is life-changing in and of itself. But it's always the folks that seem to win the $100 million lotteries that make the news, but...
Yes.
I guess you could score on the scratch-offs.
That's
a big payout.
You can.
Man, impressive stuff. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You make a million tough business decisions every day. So here's the easiest one of the year. Dell's Cyber Monday in July is back and bigger than ever. Get no-brainer deals on the very latest computers with Intel Core processors and a huge selection of servers, electronics, and more. All with free shipping on everything. To make your decision even easier, Dell's small business technology advisors can help you find just the right tech. Call 877-BUY-DELL. That's an easy call to make at 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusiness.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. New research gives some biological clues to why women may be more likely than men to develop Alzheimer's disease and how this is most common form of dementia varies by sex. NBC News says at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Los Angeles yesterday, scientists offered evidence that the disease may spread differently in the brains of women than in men. Other researchers showed that several newly identified genes seem related to the disease risk by sex. 2/3 of Alzheimer's cases in the U.S. are in women, and the association's chief science officer says it's not just because women live longer. Some previous studies suggest that women at any age are more likely than men to develop Alzheimer's. Scientists also know that a certain gene seems to raise risk more for women than for men in certain age groups. At the same time, women with the disease in its early stages may go undiagnosed. How about this? Because they tend to do better on verbal tests than men, which can mask Alzheimer's damage. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Put in four Republicans join House Democrats in an official repudiation of President Trump's racist tweets against four liberal congresswomen of color. The president and GOP leaders had tried to keep Republicans from joining Democrats to pass a resolution condemning his comments. New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says it's disappointing that more Republicans didn't denounce the president, especially Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The majority leader is complicit in advancing racism in America if he doesn't even have the backbone to speak out against the most basic line.
In tweets last night, Trump said it was so great that only four Republicans had crossed party lines. Chief Justice John Roberts is praising his late former colleague John Paul Stevens for an unrelenting commitment to justice that left America a better nation. Stevens was 99 when he died yesterday in Fort Lauderdale, a day after suffering a stroke. Appointed to the court by Republican President Gerald Ford in 1975, Stevens was a moderate who eventually became the court's leading liberal in a tenure that spanned nearly 35 years. Three civil rights and advocacy groups have filed a federal lawsuit challenging the Trump administration's latest move to widely restrict asylum for migrants coming to the southern border. The ACLU was joined by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Center for Constitutional Rights in the lawsuit, which was filed in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California. The lawsuit is asking for a declaration that the interim final rule is unlawful and invalid, as well as a preliminary and permanent injunction stopping its implementation and enforcement. The Justice Department says it will not bring federal charges against a New York City police officer in the 2014 death of Eric Garner. Garner, a 43-year-old African-American, was detained for allegedly selling loose cigarettes and died after being placed in a chokehold by the officer. Prosecutors say there was insufficient evidence to bring charges. A wheelchair user, a guide dog, sloth, skunk, flamingo, yawning face, garlic, waffle, and ice cube are among the new emoji coming to Apple devices. Apple announced the 20 new emoji as part of World Emoji Day. They'll be released for use later this year.
Thanks, Jen. Can't keep up anymore. 5 minutes in front of the hour. All a New Jersey family wanted was to get their pool filled to surprise their 8-year-old son who's suffering from cancer. NJ.com says young Devin Seiler was diagnosed in March with a type of cancer that developed in his thigh bone. He couldn't go to school because his chemo schedule was so intense. Dylan receives chemotherapy 4 to 5 days a week, 10 to 11 hours each day. He was in a full leg cast from March until his knee replacement surgery June 6th. They bought a new home in March, hoping to fix the pool by summer. The family called the local fire station to get their pool filled and needed 5 truckloads of water. But to save money for their son's treatment, the family could only afford 2 truckloads. Firefighters filled the pool for free. The pool will eventually be used for aquatherapy to help Devin regain his ability to walk. By the way, now there are even more ways to get This Morning on demand. Find our daily podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and more. Or tell Alexa or Google to play This Morning with Gordon Deal, and you'll instantly be connected to America's First News. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.